Did you come to hear of Orientals? In my experience, there are precious few of them in the Deathlands.
Suki wiped her nose on her sleeve, refusing Doc's automatic offer of his kerchief.
No thanks. Those yellow outlanders. Seems I heard some rumors of posses of them. Raiding and raping and burning and all. Far west, they said, and right up to the north.
Really? That is fascinating, my dear.
But you were telling me about this place, Spain, and a story about it.
Ah, yes. Mighty Valencia, in the ancient days of glory that was Spain, home of the leader known as El Cid. But it had its critics and its enemies.
Suki nodded wisely.
Don't we all, Doc? And ain't that the truth?
Yes, it is. Well, these men who hated Valencia created this little sort of poem about it. I'll translate it, Suki, but first in its original. En Valencia las legumbres son agua, los hombres son mujeres, y las mujeres nada. It means that in Valencia all of the vegetables taste of water, and the men are all women, and all the women are worth nothing.
I really like that a lot, Doc.
After a Spartan lunch of the last of the jerky, washed down with almost the last of their fresh water, they had decided to lie down and take a siesta. But Suki had other plans. She pulled off her worn riding boots and wriggled her toes in the sunshine.
That feels so good, Doc. Think I might take off a little more.
She dropped the dark blue jacket and peeled her way out of the white blouse, leaving herself with just the turquoise necklace above the waist. The sun spilled fire across her breasts.
Are you considering removing any further apparel, my dear lady?
Suki gave him a wicked grin.
You aiming to go delving in the root cellar again then, Doc?
It had crossed my mind that it might assuredly help to enliven what could be our last private interlude together before returning to the bosom of my friends.
Even as the word bosom slipped from his mouth, Doc knew that Suki would use it to open up some distinctly carnal negotiations. When Doc awakened, he saw that Suki was sitting cross-legged and naked, examining the inscription incised down the length of the Toledo blade of the sword stick. She saw Doc blink back toward consciousness.
Can't read this flowery writing on the steel. What's it say?
Very old, like the sword. No me saque sin razón, no me envaines sin honor. Want to know what it means, Suki?
Of course I do, you old stud. Sounds real pretty the way you set your tongue around it. Speaking of setting your tongue around something...
Suki opened her thighs a little.
Oh, no. Time passes. Bible Black Evening will soon come rolling toward us, madam. The message on my rapier warns that the steel should never be drawn without reason nor sheathed without honor.
She shuffled toward him, laying the blade aside.
Hey, that kind of moral could apply to another real different kind of weapon, Doc.
Yes, I suppose it might.
After the White Coats had selected Doc as a prime candidate for the trawling experiments known as Operation Kronos, his life had been a perpetual roller coaster of mental confusion, mostly dark and horrific, but with the occasional flash of brightness. It had been a very long time since he'd experienced such dazzling brightness as he had since his lucky meeting with Susan Smith, and entered into an admittedly short-lived relationship that had already brought him much of what he suspected might be called happiness. It was his turn to lean upon his elbow and gaze down at her sleeping face, which wasn't exactly what you have called truly pretty. The pre-Raphaelite painters that Doc so admired would not have turned their heads as she walked by them along Piccadilly. But the 43-year-old from Hildenville, the one-horse burg in the middle of the plains, had a great quality of strength in the lines of her face, a mix of wisdom and experience that was undeniably beautiful.
Well, Emily, my dearest, for the first time since the unkind Lords of Chaos drove us apart, I think that I have been truly unfaithful to your memory. Not just a penny bunk up in a dark alley or a knee tremble in the back of a hansom cab. I think that I may actually be falling a little in love with this lady.
In the bedroom where Ronnie and Raylene Warren were slowly dying of rat sickness, the couple was having what would be their last conversation.
We failed, Ronnie. The time traveler and the man with one eye were supposed to be here when we brought the bomb. Now the others will know what our treasure is and warn them away.
And worse, the bomb didn't detonate. There must have been something wrong with it.
Is that why we're sick, Ronnie? Are we going to die by something that was meant for them?
Despite the full knowledge that they both only had mere minutes left of life, Ronnie actually smiled to himself.
So, this is what it's like to die of rat sickness. It's ironic. We counteracted the rat effects for all these years, and now that we've left the Lord's domain is when we finally get sick. I guess the bomb must have leaked. We didn't take precautions. Thought we were safe. May the Lord of Shadows watch over us in death.
By the time Christy and Mildred returned to the room to question the couple, Raylene was dead, and Ronnie had slipped into a coma. Suki and Doc Ten are dressed, standing close together, both watching a bald eagle that seemed to have a nest somewhere higher up the mountain, and a mile or more away to the east of where they'd been camping. It looked like it was hunting some small rodent, constantly swooping low over the tops of the scattered pine trees, then rising 1,000 feet in the air in frustration at its lack of success. Doc tucked in the tail of his white shirt.
Must be the most marvelous feeling.
Suki ran her long-nailed fingers through her mane of silvery gold hair.
Best fun you can have and not be lying down.
Doc turned to Judas.
Well, old companion, not long now before you'll find yourself safe and snug in your familiar stable, with plenty of good straw and a bucket of sweet water as a reward for your faithful service. Reasonably faithful.
It made its kill.
Suki pointed at the eagle, now making its way eastward, its wings flapping slowly, moving with deliberate calm. Something that might have been a rabbit dangled from its curved claws. They both watched the bird for several minutes. Had either Doc or the woman looked behind them, down across the desert, they would have seen a cloud of dust drifting across the baked gray land, showing that a small party was moving out along a back trail. But by the time they turned from staring at the vanishing eagle, the dust had also disappeared. The Volvo stood cooling in the lee of a high bluff that protected it from the worst of the midday heat.
By evening?
Should be.
JB was lying flat on his back, his fedora shading his eyes, his glasses folded neatly and stuck in the top pocket of his jacket. Trader had been complaining of some stomach pains earlier in the morning, but that might have had something to do with the fact that he'd eaten a very large bowl of fiery chili beans at 10 o'clock, at the kindly invitation of a pair of Navajo sheep herders. Abe was onto the land wag, working away with a length of baling wire to fix a loose part of the exhaust system that had been rattling for the past 30 miles.
How's your guts coming along, Trader?
Getting better, thanks, Lee. Damn it, I mean Abe. Yeah, getting better after I emptied myself out in that ditch an hour back. But a clean bed and some sleep and home cooking wouldn't be a bad idea.
Be there by evening.
Looking forward to it. I've lost touch with how long we've been away.
JB flapped a persistent hornet from his face.
Long enough.
Trader picked at his lip, where the sun had started a small sore.
You men sure changed since you rode with me. All this talk of going back, getting to a fixed place, wanting to stop moving.
It's true.